The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another edition of WrestleOmics Radio. I'm Brandon Thurston, broadcasting live and on demand from Buffalo, New York, where today is Sunday, January the 7th, 2024. And today in the program, welcome to a solo edition, as I will be talking to myself. We'll see how this goes for the next, who knows how long. I could be rambling about quarter hours, YouTube, TKO consolidation for minutes, hours, it remains to be seen. But today on the program, what have I got? A lot of year-end stuff, a lot of year-end slides to go through with attendance. We will talk about Wrestle Kingdom attendance, some YouTube stuff, some quarter hours. What else have I got here? The biggest quarter hour, the quarter hours for the biggest shows, for the highest viewership shows of the year, some of that. And a strange discovery that I've found related to The Big Bang Theory. No, not the astrophysics theory, but the television program that does enormous viewership in reruns somehow. There's more, but we'll see. Maybe it's too much. We'll see. Of course, WrestleOmics Radio is free today because it is the first Sunday of the month. It is the first Sunday of January, so it's free for everyone on YouTube. We're streaming live here on YouTube, on Facebook, on X, formerly known as Twitter, on Twitch. I decided to hit the Twitch button. I don't know if anybody's watching us on Twitch today, but we're on Twitch as well. And every other week, this is for subscribers only at patreon.com/WrestleOmics. So there's that. If you haven't listened to it already, Pollock and Thurston, we had a program on Wednesday where we talked to Chris Samsa, as well as Phil Strum. Talked to Chris Samsa about Wrestle Kingdom that was upcoming, and talked to Phil Strum about the World's End Presser and the controversy surrounding Chris Jericho. So check that out if you haven't already. And I guess we'll get started. Wrestle Kingdom attendance, 27,422. 27,422. So what is that? That's a little bit better by, you know, what, 1,400. It's a little bit better than the prior year in 2023, when there were no more capacity restrictions, but there were still, as I understand it, cheering restrictions. There were no cheering sections, and I think there were cheering sections. The real pro experts can correct me, but I think 2023 is the year where everybody finally in Japan got back to pre-pandemic live events, in terms of full capacity, full cheering allowed. So does the notion that being able to cheer everywhere, does that make the event more attractive to go to, or does that also coincide with less hesitancy about the safety of attending? I don't know. So maybe those are some tailwinds that should have made this show have higher attendance, and it did slightly higher. This is, in fact, still higher attendance than 2016, as we can see here in the chart, or 2017, when they did 25,000 in 2016 and 26,000 in 2017. We believe, by the way, all these attendances are legit. I think that they're probably paid plus paid ticket sales plus comps, I think is what we're looking at here. Around May 2015, the New Japan website, which has always reported attendance for each one of their events. Those attendances are believed by myself and people who I trust better than myself about these subjects. Beginning around May 2015, the attendances became more legit. Maybe that has to do with Bushiroad being the parent company. I don't know. But we do believe that these attendances from the middle of 2015 and forward are pretty legit. So anyway, of course, nowhere near the heights of New Japan's success in the late 2010s, 2019, 38,000. And then they did the two-day Wrestle Kingdom under the guidance of Harold May. 40,000 on day one, 30,000 on day two. So this is, although New Japan is now, I think, finally back in terms of this, the safety restrictions, finally back from the pandemic, but clearly that was a peak that they were on in 2018, 2019, and early 2020 that they have yet to return to. But you could say, hey, maybe business is at the level of 2016 and 17. We'll look at some annual attendance data later on. I guess is the main event today, looking at AEW, WWE, and New Japan annual attendance trends. There are reports for that, too, on the Patreon. Briefly, we will break some news here. Not very interesting news, not very meaningful news, but we will break some news here. We have some ratings that have not been reported elsewhere up to this moment. Impact and New Japan. Impact was watched by 65,000 viewers on Thursday. It was a best of episode. I understand I'm not watching, but I understand that Impact hasn't really aired new content since mid-November or so. There'll be a preview episode of the pay-per-view Hard to Kill this coming Thursday, and then they will return with actual new content the week after that. So this rating is pretty low. What we have here in the table is the averages by month, and what we have here is 65,000 for the only episode in January so far, and that will be their, you know, that's lower than any of the monthly averages preceding. New Japan aired not new Wrestle Kingdom content on January 4th, Thursday. I think they did last year. I want to say maybe they did, maybe they will next week. In any case, they re-aired the Osprey and Omega match from the prior year and did 60,000 viewers, which is fine for them. As you can see here in the charts, in the range of 60 is what they're often doing on average. So there's that. What did we learn here? Not particularly meaningful. We'll see what happens in the future as far as Impact and if they're... Oh my! By the way, a little hard to find Impact Wrestling in the Nielsen data. They have they've rebranded, of course, to TNA, and now their program name is different. So there's that. We'll talk about some live event data here. The biggest gates of the year, the biggest pay-per-view gates for pay-per-view events. And by the way, what was the gate for New Japan? I don't know, for the Wrestle Kingdom. I was told last year for 2023's Wrestle Kingdom that the gate was probably just over $2 million. So I would imagine this year's did similar, given the attendance was similar. I don't know if there's a difference in ticket prices. But to put that in some context with what we're about to talk about here, 2023, the pay-per-view live event gates for AEW. Of course, the biggest one was $10 million for All In. And what I've got here on this chart is the number, the gate number, and the source where it comes from. So we know from Pollstar, $737,000 is what Revolution did. Double or Nothing, $964,000. Forbidden Door, $1.2 million. All Out, $800,000. That is my estimate, because we don't have a Pollstar number for All Out, and we don't have anything like a records request to substantiate that. But that's based on what Tony said, where I believe he said something to the effect of it was, I don't have it in front of me, but something to the effect of I ended up believing that it was about $800,000. And then Wrestle Dream, just over $500,000. So the lowest one, Wrestle Dream, Full Gear, $900,000, and World's End, I'm going to estimate around $850,000. And then WWE, just about every, with the exception of Elimination Chamber, which came very, very close. We got every pay-per-view. I did exclude Saudi Arabia events here because I have no great idea how to understand what the gate was for those events, and I'm not sure WWE even directly collects that money. Nonetheless, we do know that the Saudi Arabia events, including what, Night of Champions and Crown Jewel, WWE is collecting a $50 million plus slight fee for those events. So $50 million would blow away anything on this chart here. But every pay-per-view did about $1 million or more. Elimination Chamber did $998,000. That is in U.S. dollars. I know it was in Montreal. And we have the stadium events that did $8.5 million for SummerSlam, $7.3 million for Royal Rumble, $9.5 million for WrestleMania Night 2, $10.2 million for WrestleMania Night 2, or did I say Night 1? $9.5 million for WrestleMania Night 1, $10.2 million for WrestleMania Night 2, and everything else did at least $1 million. I'm going to estimate that Survivor Series did just over $2 million based on, I think I based this on, looking at what the average ticket sold price was for last year's, for the previous year's Survivor Series in Boston, and extrapolating that onto an estimate of what the ticket sales were. So taking WrestleTix estimated distributed, knocking some off for ticket for comps, and then multiplying that by a calculated ticket price. And I do get over $2 million, which is under WrestleMania in Chicago, which it had to fall short of, which they said it, which WWE did say it did fall short of. A record for Chicago, with the exception of the WrestleMania in Chicago in, 2006. So there's that. What did we learn here from any of this? That WWE's had, on the high end of their events, some really strong peak events. We'll do Royal Rumble in Tampa, and we'll see how that compares to this Royal Rumble. If the ticket prices are higher, I can't imagine the attendance is going to get much higher than the roughly 50,000 they had at the Alamo Dome. The Money in the Bank number was tremendous, given it was in an arena, over $3 million. So there's that. Do we learn anything about AEW here, in that they are, you know, I mean, relative to WWE, a little bit under that, a little bit under what WWE is doing, but, they're still able to do strong, big events with, you know, a strong gate. So the highest attendances for this year, of course, All In is number one with their announced 81,000 paid. WrestleTix estimated 83,000 distributed. The Borough of Brent told us 72,000 through the turnstiles, as recorded through the turnstiles. Even if we're just using that number, it's still by a decent margin the most highly attended event of 2023, followed by WrestleMania Night 1 and Night 2, SummerSlam, Royal Rumble, the Kijimoto Pro Wrestling Last Love Holdout Tokyo Dome Show, Wrestle Kingdom of 2023 with 26,000. And then we have, and that's the end of the stadium events, I guess, right? And then we get into Backlash in Puerto Rico, Money in the Bank in London, Survivor Series in Chicago, the night before Survivor Series in Chicago, the SmackDown, the MSG house show that just took place on December 26th, the Raw in LA, probably at the Forum. This is the post-WrestleMania Raw. Is that the Forum that they run there? I think it is, unless it's the Staples Center. Anyway, Triple Mania in Tijuana, CML, the anniversary show for CML. That is the anniversary show, right? Here's where I had to ask Lucha Blog about this data that I got from a cage match. And it looks like it's about 15,000 for Arena Mexico. And so we have three CMLL shows, presumably at Arena Mexico, right? 15,000 towards the end of the year. And then we have Elimination Chamber in Montreal, which I was at, 14,600. And Raw in Philadelphia for the Raw Triple X 30th anniversary. And finally, the Toronto SmackDown. So there's all that. And then I couldn't help myself. I had to go to the cage match data and look at what were the highest rated matches of the year for this year on cage match. And we have at number 10, Drew McIntyre and Sheamus versus Gunther. That is a three-way match. And I guess I could have replaced the "and" with versus. A lot of this is automated, obviously, at WrestleMania. Then we have number 9, the Collision, that hour-long tag match between Jay White with Juice Robinson against FTR. And then at number 8, Kento Miyahara and Katsuhiko Nakajima from Noah One Night Dream in July. Will Ospreay versus Shota Umino in November at Power Struggle in New Japan. At number 6, we have Tetsuya Naito versus Will Ospreay from the G1 Climax. That is the semifinal at the Sumo Hall. And then we have the top 5. Kenny Omega versus Will Ospreay in Toronto Forbidden Door. I was there for that with the infamous Tiger Driver 91, or whatever he called it. MJF versus Bryan Danielson at Revolution. The Iron Man match, Bryan Danielson versus Zack Sabre Jr. at Wrestle Dream. Adam Page versus Swerve Strickland at in the Texas Death Match at Full Gear. And then finally, probably what's going to win match of the year with a lot of whoever's doing awards, right? Kenny Omega versus Will Ospreay at Wrestle Kingdom 1 year ago with a 9.76 based on 1,000 votes. So there might be a few more votes at this point, but I think this order is still accurate. Of course, cage match rankings can always change, just like Fritz's favorite songs, right? The rankings can always change. All right. And on to things that I think it's interesting to look at. Like, I was going to look at event ratings. To what extent does this matter? I was going to look at event ratings too, and using cage match as a sample, or maybe a bellwether, looking at, you know, how the shows have been received. I think there are some hints that you can get out of this stuff. This isn't, cage match isn't the end all be all, but it is interesting to look at the critical reception. And I think these things do tell you sort of who's getting the most efficient free advertisement, because people are telling each other about, look at this good content that you can see. That's what they say. Check out this content. Speaking of content, we'll go to YouTube now with more year-end data, looking at what were. So this is not taking into account every video, but only the videos that pertain to weekly shows. So Raw, SmackDown, NXT. We're looking at the WWE events here as I drink coffee. So we're looking at those three weekly TV shows. Sorry, no NXT Level Up or whatever. So we're looking at those, and we're looking at these all with the same duration of lifetime. So we're looking at this only through 7 days, and it just so happens that's all I'm scraping. I'm scraping WWE and AEW. We'll talk about AEW in a minute. Don't worry. I scraped WWE and AEW's YouTube channels every single hour, and I follow every video for the first 7 days, or 168 hours of its lifetime. Well, I don't, but the bots do, right? No, the Python scripts do. And the most watched video through 7 days for WWE on its official channel, here's another caveat. There's like WWE on USA YouTube channels now, right? And I think WWE on Fox. And WWE does not seem to be particularly vigilant in taking down people who are reposting on YouTube their videos. I've seen some of that where highlights of their shows, which are just seem to be a replication of what they have on their own official channel, where those videos may be getting hundreds of thousands, maybe millions of views, which I imagine they're still monetizing. They're still getting the ad revenue related to those because it's their copyrighted material. Point being, not all of the consumption may be represented here, but I am inclined to believe a really good sample is here. Anyway, what's the most watched video? By far, with 5.5 million views, almost doubling anybody else at number two, is The Rock returns to dismantle Austin Theory, proving that Austin Theory is the biggest draw in WWE, right? Well, or maybe it was Dwayne. Number two, Tribal Court is tied with Rey Mysterio snapping and punching his son Dominic. Family entertainment for everyone. And then we have at number four, CM Punk returns to Raw. I imagine his Survivor Series clip did well here, but we don't have the Survivor Series clip because that didn't happen on weekly TV, but his return to Raw did, with his lukewarm promo, right? Roman Reigns deals with the bloodline dissension. This was something that was happening on June 2nd on SmackDown. Raw's craziest moments, which I should have excluded because it had the word moments in it. So disregard that one. Seven, the entire Cody Rhodes, Roman Reigns, Brock Lesnar saga, post-WrestleMania. And that's number seven. Sami Zayn launches a sneak attack on Roman Reigns February 7th. The Usos superkick Roman Reigns on June 16th. Roman Reigns berates Sami Zayn on January 6th. Owens delivers a surprise attack on Reigns in the Bloodline January 20th. The Rock and John Cena highlight Wild SmackDown. Randy Orton, Dominic Mysterio, The Rock comes face to face with John Cena. Randy Orton officially signs with SmackDown. The Bloodline brawl with the Judgment Day. So a lot of a lot of Roman Reigns here, I would say. A lot of bloodline. And we could continue on here, but I'm hesitant to read a bunch of stuff here. So there's that. We do have a CM Punk confronting Seth Rollins down here at 23. So some Rock. Almost three segments from the Rock and a lot of bloodline. That's my takeaway here. Some Randy Orton, too. These returns, what I would say are, and we'll see a lot of this in the AEW stuff that we're about to look at, moments that are career moments, significant moments in someone's career, a debut, a return, unfortunately, when people pass away, which I think we'll see in some of the quarter hour. We'll see in what was the most watched telecast in all of wrestling this year on US television. Career moments, you know, major moments in people's lives. That's what I almost want to say has a big tailwind to it and is not in its own right necessarily indicative of, if you want to answer the question, the most important question in our lives, which is who's a draw. Anyway, so let's look at a great example of this. Number one and number two most watched videos from weekly television on AEW's YouTube channel, the rated R superstar Adam Copeland kicks off a must-see opening to Collision. This is after he'd already been there for a week, I think. And then we have at number two, him making his in-ring debut against Luchasaurus. So Adam Copeland, formerly known as Edge, number one and number two. CM Punk returning is number three on Collision. The Nature Boy Ric Flair is number four with his debut in AEW. Christian Cage responds to Adam Copeland's challenge. A lot of Christian Cage and Adam Copeland here. Darby Allin dethrones the King of Television in his hometown. I think that's him beating, this is a year ago, him beating Samoa Joe. For the first time in over 13 years, Christian versus Adam Copeland. AEW has a very different style of labeling these video titles. Sting and Adam Copeland from November 1st. What did MJF have to say to Samoa Joe in September? Darby Allin, Chris Jericho confront Sammy Guevara. Jeff Hardy returns to AEW. Can anyone challenge the Don Callis family? Powerhouse Hobbs. Well, this is one segment that I don't know what this segment really constituted, but maybe because a lot of times what these video titles will not do is will not name everyone who's prominently in this video. But what we see a lot of here, and here we go, Mark Briscoe and Jay Lethal paid tribute to Jay Briscoe. I think what we're seeing here is a lot of returns, a lot of debuts, indeed a lot of former W talent. But this Powerhouse Hobbs video, I would say, would be an exception of that. Here's someone who's not a former W talent. This doesn't mean that Powerhouse Hobbs is like a huge star, but this is something that stands out to me. And maybe this one too, although it does have Jericho in it, this one with Darby Allin, and Sammy Guevara. And there's more. So, Sabu takes the side of Adam Copeland, of Adam Cole and Roderick Strong. So there's that. We'll keep going here and, we'll look at the top performing quarter hours of all of 2023. Now, what does top performing mean? If you ever looked at one of my, quarter hour tables, then you know that quarter hours can be misleading. Unless you're just trying to make an antagonistic point. But quarter hours can be really misleading because of a lot of external factors, including ad breaks, including what came before it, including what else is on television. And I think, in fact, YouTube videos are a cleaner way to look at it because it doesn't have as many external factors that are pulling on the viewership or the views. Views and viewership are not the same thing, certainly, when it comes to YouTube videos and Nielsen data, Nielsen AMA data. So anyway, what we're doing here in this quarter hour study that we're briefly going to run through is we're excluding all quarter hour ones. I'll explain why. And we're excluding overruns, which is controversial, but I'm excluding overruns. And we're excluding everything from the first episode of Collision because this study is based on the growth or loss from this quarter compared to the quarter before it. So therefore, we cannot look at quarter hour ones because, well, at least I don't know what was on the quarter hour. I don't know what the data was for the quarter hour before it, and I don't think it would be fair to look at that anyway because let's say it's a rerun of Law and Order on before Raw. I expect Raw quarter hour one to be way bigger because of the tune-in. I don't think it's necessarily fair to look at tune-in as in the same way that you look at quarter to quarter growth within the same program anyway. And we're looking at that growth, not just absolutely on its own, but as it's subtracted from the 90-day trend for that particular quarter hour time slot. So that's why we can't look at the first episode of Collision, because it has no history at that point to compare it against. So there's that. There are, so there will be some quarter hour ones that I do think on their own are significant, because let's say they're the most watched quarter in their entire show. But for the sake of doing something that's broad and sweeping and can apply to every quarter hour from 2023 that we have, which is every quarter hour for every weekly WNAW TV show, all six of them, to do something that's broad and sweeping that will apply evenly to everyone on a level playing field, at least for the quarter hours that survive these exceptions. So anyway, what are they? Here's the WWE stuff. Here's the top 10 for each program, for SmackDown, for Raw, for NXT. And number one, the quarter hour that moved the viewership the most, while adjusting for what that quarter hour usually does, number one, Roman Reigns and the Usos live angle with Solo Sikoa. Is that tribal court? Anyway, we don't have them named with their official brands as the WWE YouTube titles do. But that quarter hour got to 3 million viewers. That might be the most watched quarter hour of the entire year, too, in any case. Number two, Roman Reigns, Sami Zayn live promo. This is leading up to Elimination Chamber. Number three, Roman Reigns, Jey Uso, Jimmy Uso live promo. Number four, we have AJ Styles backstage promo, but the Miz and LA Knight live promo. So something that's not Roman Reigns and the Bloodline there at number four, and it's LA Knight and the Miz. And then we have a Triple H live promo. I don't remember what that announcement was. And we have a Judgment Day live promo, a John Cena live promo. We have a Cody Rhodes and Ludwig Kaiser match, followed by, probably more importantly, a Paul Heyman and Cody Rhodes live promo. The Bloodline live promo. And we have here at number nine, the finish of Knight versus Butch, the Usos, Paul Heyman, Solo Sikoa backstage. And then we have a WWE draft segment. And then later on, we have a Triple H and Roman Reigns live promo. I'm guessing that is the 10-year, I don't know, the championship ceremony or whatever it was. And then we have Raw. The most watched, well, the strongest mover on Raw was the Drew McIntyre and Judgment Day versus Cody Rhodes, Uso, is it Jey Uso, Randy Orton, and Sami Zayn. That moved 14% in the demo. And then we have John Cena and Austin Theory live promo leading up to WrestleMania, where John Cena buries Austin Theory. CM Punk and Seth Rollins, Cody Rhodes and Paul Heyman. Oh, Sami Zayn, Cody Rhodes, I'm sorry. Cody Rhodes and Paul Heyman. Rhodes, Rollins, Judgment Day, Sami Zayn live promo. Nia Jax versus Zoe Stark appearing backstage angle with Miz. Seth Rollins live promo. This is the night that Punk has returned. So this is the night where they save Punk for last. And the Seth Rollins promo in the middle of the show did pull viewership up strongly. Cody Rhodes and Jey Uso versus Damian Priest and Finn Balor. Roman Reigns, Cody Rhodes, Paul Heyman live promo the night after WrestleMania. 4 minutes of a Triple H live promo and a host of other backstage and other segments, and something with the Usos after that. So what do we have here? A lot of some Judgment Day. I think the Judgment Day have been on the positive end of movers here. This is a Judgment Day video, but this is Drew McIntyre and the Judgment Day in a match. John Cena, CM Punk and Seth Rollins. CM Punk issue has been big. His return. Cody Rhodes in a number of segments here. So this supports the notion that Cody Rhodes is really helping business, right? We've seen he's ranked highly in my analysis of WWE Shop. He's number one for the full year, in my estimates, I should say. And he was number one by WWE's own infographic, right? Which seems to be a top 10 ranking. Didn't have numbers on it, but seemed to be a top 10 ranking. Cody Rhodes and Roman Reigns, 1 and 2. So there's some of that. And I think, again, the Judgment Day, you've got, Judgment Day, Rhodes, Rollins, Judgment Day, Sami Zayn live angle. And a little bit of Sami Zayn in here too. As well as in SmackDown leading up to that Elimination Chamber match. And then NXT. Everyone is wondering about the NXT Core Hours, right? We have Seth Rollins versus Bron Breakker at number one. I did exclude overruns here. So this, why did I exclude overruns? Because some of them are 1 minute long. And I don't think it's significant to look at 1 minute in the same way that we're going to look at what are otherwise all 15-minute segments. But that did mean we excluded some longer overruns that were like 9 minutes or even 14 minutes. But we did exclude a Becky Lynch quarter hour where she was wrestling Tiffany Stratton that did really well as a result of excluding all overruns. Dijak versus Eddie Thorpe, which was just a couple weeks ago. That's number two. We have a Cora Jade Lyra Valkyria live promo. We have Ilya Dragunov, JD McDonagh live promo. I'm trying to focus on things that were probably the longest segment here. A Dabba Kato versus Axiom post-match. We have a Noam Dar versus Gable, Chad Gable match post-match. We have a post-match angle with Metaphor and Alpha Academy. We have Axiom Frazier Dragunov backstage angle. Some of these things don't necessarily make sense or sound like there's something that truly it was related to this content in particular that moved it. But we have Wesley versus Dominic Mysterio. So we have Dominic Mysterio. And then we have Indy Hartwell versus Zoe Stark. Yeah. And then we have Tatum Paxley versus Kalani Jordan. A lot of these things just don't necessarily jump out as like, oh yeah, there was a lot of buzz around that. And that intuition is then corroborated with this data. We have less of that here, although Seth Rollins and Bron Breakker definitely rises to that, right? And then moving on to the AEW. I'll do Dynamite first. At number one, we have the last 4 minutes of, this is on March 8th, the last 4 minutes of Orange Cassidy versus Jay Lethal with Jeff Jarrett and Best Friends. That in quarter hour two, for whatever reason, moved the demo by 13% in a quarter hour that usually goes down 6. So Jeff Jarrett wins again. And then we have Mark Briscoe versus Jay White just recently. This is from the Continental Classic on November 8th. We have Juice Robinson, the Guns, and MJF live promo. I wonder if that is the October 4th. That sounds like it's the quarters angle. And then we have Chris Jericho, Don Callis live promo from July. We have Adam Cole, MJF, Roderick Strong live promo from August. We have Guns and FTR live promo from March. We have Adam Page and Swerve Strickland live promo. I don't think this was the recent one where they had their promo that was really well regarded, but this is from September the 6th. Right, because that was a match that happened at Full Gear in November. And it was, you know, it was a week prior that the memorable promo was. Anyway, Tony Storm versus Sky Blue in quarter hour 6 on March 22nd moved the demo up by 5% in a quarter that usually is down 8% and makes this list. MJF and Adam Cole versus Brian Cage and Big Bill, with MJF and Adam Cole doing something post-match in July, on July 12th. And then we have a, what, Kenny Omega versus who? As I will pull it up in real time to find out who was Kenny Omega facing there, because it's cut off in our table. So at, and what is this? It ends with Cassidy Kyle Fletcher. Is that correct? No, Cassidy Kyle Fletcher backstage angle. There we go. Kenny Omega versus John Moxley is that match on May the 10th. So that makes sense as a match that people were tuning in to see in quarter hour 7 on May the 10th. Collision. Again, we don't have the first Collision. We had nothing to compare it against. That's not to discount that people tuned in the highest viewership the Collision may ever get for the return of CM Punk. But number one, in terms of moving the ratings, moving the quarter hours, MJF versus Kenny Omega on October 28th. Then we have Claudio Castagnoli and Andrade El Idolo. And then we have Roderick Strong versus Darius Martin, post-match angle, with the Kingdom in action and ready. Gravity and Commander versus Buddy Matthews and Malakai Black. We have Andrade El Idolo versus Daniel Garcia post-match with CJ Perry. We have the finish of Christopher Daniels versus Juice Robinson with a post-match angle with Juice Robinson and Jay White live promo. We have Iron Savages and Jack Jameson live promo, followed by Iron Savages and Jameson versus the Guns and Juice Robinson. Brian Danielson versus Eddie Kingston on December 2nd as part of the Continental Classic. The finish of a tag match team involving Parker and Menard against Commander and Penta, with Brian Danielson as that Andrade El Idolo in the end here. As I look on my spreadsheet off screen, looking at what, number 9 or so on December 9th? December 9th? Are we all looking at the same thing here? I'm not sure. Anyway, and then we have at number 10, Mark Briscoe, FDR backstage, Lance Archer versus Darby Allin. So some of these things make sense. Some of these things do not necessarily feel meaningful. And then we have Rampage, where the trend for Rampage is usually it starts out with the, you know, with quarter hour one being something, and then basically the next three quarters are in decline. December 13th, I believe I did exclude preemptions here. So we have some weird preemptions where Rampage was following a college basketball game or something and had a massive audience. But that should lead to a lot of tune out anyway. But we do have Parker Menard and Garcia versus Cassidy and the Hardys at number one here, which somehow moved the audience by 38%, which doesn't make much sense. At 10 to 10:15. This must have been something where they had a weird time slot, right? Because 10 to 10:15 would otherwise be quarter hour one. The Royal Rampage on July 21st. The last 2 minutes of Guevara and Jericho ramp promo, Britt Baker, Hikaru Shida, and Sky Blue in a six person tag match, the Hardys and the Kingdom, and more things here. I don't know that the rest of these are particularly meaningful, especially when we're talking about Rampage, where, I mean, some of these, do we get into, like, yes, some of these did lose viewers. At least one of these did, because the trend is so strong in the other direction. So there's the quarter hours. Did we learn anything from this about AEW? And to contrast it with their YouTube videos that I think corroborate what we often see in the quarter hours, I don't feel like I learned a ton here. MJF and Adam Cole, at least early on, did seem to move quarter hours. Did we really see much of that in the YouTube videos, though? Probably. If I read through all of these again, I could probably find one or two. But I don't see much corroboration here. What ideally I could do is go through every episode and look at every episode of quarter hours, and then look at the videos for that show and corroborate one against the other to say, okay, was this a, did this quarter hour seem to perform well? Did we also see the YouTube clip for that segment perform well relative to the others on the show? And we've done things like that in the past. But we don't see to the same extent that we see in WWE in terms of certain people really standing out in the other company, Roman Reigns, Cody Rhodes, somewhat the Judgment Day, Seth Rollins, somewhat, CM Punk's return. Those are the big things, I think. And the bloodline. When we say Roman Reigns, it should include the Usos as part of that, and Heyman. So, and we don't have, as to the same extent, these people who really stand out. What we see in the YouTube videos certainly is a lot of returning and debuting people, and some Sting, you know. And I think that's consistent with a year in which WWE got stronger, and you could say, based on this data, their star power, the individual star power of their key stars got stronger. And in the case of AEW, things became a bit more mediocre. And what really popped, at least at these numbers, at least in YouTube, was returns, sort of, you could say, novelties, returning, debuting major names. So there's that. And who are the big stars who have really emerged in this year who are new and their own for AEW? It's hard for Swerve is maybe the one that's coming this year. So there's all the quarter hours. You can get the quarter hour reports, as I get them at patreon.com/WrestleNomics. And we'll look at what the biggest television viewership was, for these shows overall. The biggest, the most watched US telecast of a wrestling program in 2023 was this episode of SmackDown on August 25th. Which did what for an actual number here on August 25th, which included a tribute to, this is just after Bray Wyatt passed away, just after Terry Funk passed away, around the same time. So what we have here is 2.58 million viewers. This did in the demo in terms of a rating, did a 0.76 demo rating. And, it started off with the tribute, and that was the most watched quarter hour. So that was the most watched episode of SmackDown. This is the most watched episode of Raw. And that is, this was actually more watched than that episode of SmackDown in the demo. This is the post WrestleMania episode of Raw, which, you know, grew from quarter hour one to quarter hour two and peaking at, you know, 2.598, almost 2.6 million viewers for the Roman Reigns, Cody Rhodes, Paul Heyman live promo, and then slid like a slide until the last two quarter hours when it grew back up, concluding with a Brock Lesnar and Cody Rhodes live angle. So that was the most watched Raw of the year. And it was the most watched, it was more watched in the demo than any SmackDown this year, which is, you know, in every other week, almost Raw is under what SmackDown is doing. And what did this actually do for a number here? This post WrestleMania Raw on April 3rd, it did 2.26 million viewers. The most recent episode of SmackDown will probably beat that in total viewership, but in a 0.76 in the demo. So virtually equal to what that Bray Wyatt and Terry Funk tribute SmackDown did, but slightly higher in terms of actual viewers, because if you don't know, the P18-49 rating is based on the number of viewers as a percentage of the national population within that age group. And we had 997,000 viewers in that age group. We had slightly less than that for that episode of SmackDown. So that's the most watched WWE shows of the year. And then we have the most watched Dynamite of the year, April 22nd. Everybody remembers that one, right? The April 22nd Dynamite on TBS. That I think there were only, if you're one of those million people, I think there were only three or four times when Dynamite hit a million viewers in this year. In any case, as you can see, most of the quarter hours here were over a million viewers. One, two, three, four, five out of, was there an overrun here? No, 5 out of 8. And we had what on this show? Was this like a branded Dynamite? This had Orange Cassidy and Wheeler Yuta. This had a Ricky Starks live promo, a Jericho live promo, Jericho and Ricky Starks live promo, The Acclaimed versus The Firm, Jack Perry and Christian Cage, Saraya versus Sky Blue, Bryan Danielson MJF live promo, which the demo grew, but the total audience didn't. We have, I'm skipping over things that are backstage here. We had a Revolution Tag Team Battle Royal. We had Tony Khan and Adam Cole backstage promo. Not skipping over that one. And a six-man, is this a six-man or eight-man? One, two, three, four. Oh, wow, now it's a backstage angle. And then we have John Moxley, Evil Uno entrances, and then an Evil Uno, John Moxley main event. So that was the most watched Dynamite. For what reason, I don't know. And it's not like, wow, this had like this huge lead-in? Apparently not, because it's not like you see this huge quarter one to quarter two decline. Probably just had the Big Bang Theory as a lead-in. More on the Big Bang Theory later. Oh, stay tuned for the Big Bang Theory. And then in the demo, that was total viewership. That was this show that was most watched in terms of total viewership. And by the way, what did it do on February 22nd? On February 22nd, that episode of Dynamite was watched by an average of 1,028,000 viewers, did a 0.35 in the demo. But then we had the Grand Slam episode, which was more watched in the demo, and that did a 0.36 in the demo. So slightly higher by one full ratings point, but it was only watched by 984,000 viewers. So no million for, here it is, the Grand Slam episode. And that makes sense why this would be among the more watched, most watched episodes of Dynamite of the year. Heavily hyped in Arthur Ashe Stadium. You had Claudio Castagnoli versus Eddie Kingston. You had the main event of MJF versus Samoa Joe. Chris Jericho versus Sammy Guevara in the middle. John Moxley versus Rey Fénix. Sworn where he gets concussed. Saraya versus Tony Storm. Those look like the matches. Okay. Those were the most watched shows of the year for the respective companies. But then this year, already this year, day one, January 1st, Raw was on television. It was on the USA Network. And by my formula of conditional formatting that I've been applying to, I've modified it a little bit. I haven't modified it in a while, though. But we have a lot of green boxes here that are supposed to indicate maybe this was actually about the content, the reason why the viewership is up. A lot of green boxes here. But by far, the most interesting one is the quarter hour at 10 to 10:15. And in fact, what happened before it, we had a hyped return of a WWE champion. And of course it was Jinder Mahal. Jinder Mahal, the former WWE champion, who could forget, coming out to do a live promo. But then he was spoiled and foiled by The Rock, Dwayne Johnson, coming out, where viewership averaged for those 15 minutes. And we do have, you know, we had an ad break and then we had a Jinder Mahal live promo. I did have this on mute. Like, I don't know how long he was out there by himself, but that's what we have labeled here, from 9:45 to 10. So he's out there by himself, apparently. And then into the next quarter, that's where The Rock joined him. You know, reportedly the segment went way over time. In any case, the portion with The Rock from 10 to 10:15 averaged 2,154,000 viewers, by far bigger than anything on the show. As you can see in the line chart here, we have this big hump here, and then a big decline afterward as well. I continue to speculate what happens here. What helps these buzzworthy segments do especially well is I speculate that people hear about the segment on social media, I guess, or through fax machine or through landline telephone conversation, and then they go into their DVR and they check it out and they watch that 15 minutes or so, and then they turn it off. Which is consistent with the trend that we see here, going from 2.154 million viewers to 1.57 following that. And we've seen that on a number of other occasions too. But in any case, big movement here. This was the most watched Raw since the post-Survivor Series episode. Consistent with the activity we saw in quarter hours, the YouTube video for this segment is over 4 million views. I don't think it's reached 5 yet. Don't know that it will within 7 days. But if it does, there will be an automatic tweet that happens from the WrestleNomics account. So there's that. And then we'll talk about NXT, everyone's favorite show. So NXT had their New Year's Evil special, or at least their New Year's Evil branded week of NXT. 768,000 viewers, a 0.25 in the demo. This was their highest since November 7th in each of those measurements. So a good rating for NXT. This is coming off, by the way, both of these shows for both NXT and Raw, coming off a week of pretty low ratings, the week of Christmas. Raw had the best of show that did a fraction of the audience that it usually does. NXT was not particularly highly watched either, right? Because it was up 15% in this week versus the prior week. Up 32% in the demo for this episode versus the prior week. Looking like we're going to see similar for SmackDown based on the fast affiliates at this point too. But anyway, pretty good rating for NXT. this episode is up 79% versus the prior year's average in the demo. In any case, what I really want to look at here is compare this to Dynamite in a particular way, but let's just talk about what Dynamite did in the same week, which it did, I think, you know, an okay rating, 801,000 viewers, a 0.26 in the demo. And this episode was down 5% versus the prior week, down 3% versus the trailing four, down 7% in the demo versus the trailing four. So actually this is on the lower side for what Dynamite, has been doing lately. So not a great rating. 2.6 they've done. It's not the lowest since some milestone, but this was on the lower end of what they've done. So keeping that in mind, okay, this is what the quarter hours looked like for Dynamite. Yes, we'll talk about the Big Bang Theory issue first. A big quarter hour one, over a million viewers in quarter hour one, inheriting some audience while gaining some tune in. So we have here, for people who don't know, right, is you have, yes, Big Bang Theory, for whatever reason, captivates a significant audience on TBS at 7:30. And you have people at the end of that episode who left the television on. And then you also have new viewers arriving to watch Dynamite. So you have this high audience of over a million viewers. And then some of those viewers who are watching Big Bang Theory, they leave. And we have a big decline. So we went from 1,063,000 viewers to 858,000 viewers. So that's a strong decline. And, you know, I'd heard some chatter about how, well, the Big Bang Theory effect, the Big Bang Theory tune out, you might say, the tune out from quarter hour one to quarter hour two, or any subsequent quarter hours, has been stronger than usual. And I was tempted to dismiss this and say, people who are talking about ratings who aren't me don't know what they're talking about. So I looked into this, ready to refute this easily refutable argument, right? So there they are. There's the cast of the Big Bang Theory, who are the real draws. And what I found was, so what I did was I compared the total audience, and this is especially pronounced in total audience, right? Big Bang Theory is less watched with the demo than total audience, at least relative to Dynamite. But what I found was, you know, comparing quarter hour one of Dynamite to Dynamite's own quarter hour two to eight, that is the rest of the show, comparing the first quarter hour to the rest of the show, or alternatively, there's no difference really, comparing quarter hour one and two versus the rest of the show, which is three to eight. what we're seeing here is the disparity between those early quarters or quarter and the rest of the show has gotten greater and has been greater than usual. And if you're watching NVIDIA, you can see I've drawn a 13-week moving average trend line. Why 13 weeks? Because that's about a quarter of a year. And this is across the entire timeline of AEW Dynamite on TBS. Of course, it moved from TNT to TBS in January 2022. And what we see here over time is, well, not over time. I guess what we see is the difference between the early quarters and the rest of the show is around 10, 20%. Sometimes it's as high as 30%, but sometime around early October, we have that disparity has been higher than average, basically on a consecutive basis. All right, you see all these dots here. Let me use my mouse. Can you see my mouse? I don't think you can. In any case, what we have here is, yeah, there we go. All these dots here from just after October begins. All these dots here are above this average trend line, which is just another way of saying the disparity has been higher than usual. That also does coincide with total viewership being in a negative slope since mid-October or so. I did exclude preemptions here. There are probably a couple episodes in this entire timeline that did not actually get the Big Bang Theory as a lead-in, but we're dealing with what around something over 100 episodes here, I think. And I did exclude preemptions. So anyway, and we do have viewership where, you know, look at these gray dots. They're mostly since October, mostly under this 13-week average trend line. So there's something happening there, and I don't know what that story is. I can come up with an antagonistic story to say, these Big Bang viewers, they leave the TV on and they hate what they see in quarter hour one. I don't see any reason to think that's the case more than usual. So I'm not sure what's happening there. And it's not, I mean, unless the viewership for Big Bang Theory has like increased during this time, but I was told, and I have to look, we do get this data on a delayed basis, but I was told that, you know, the most recent week, which is included here, the lead in was weaker than usual. So and given just the nature of television, traditional television being in secular decline, I would just expect that Big Bang viewership's performance, while being exceptional for a rerun, is going to decline slightly over time. So I don't know what to make of this. This is data. I've taken data and I have done an analysis But the next step is to find out why, you know, the insight of why this is happening. And I just don't know what that is. I don't know what other story to come up with to like explain that. As I struggle with this collar here. Okay. So if you have any ideas, I don't know. I'm not monitoring the live chat. There could be absolute chaos and anarchy and verbal abuse happening in the chat, but I'm not monitoring it. I will look at it later. So there's that. An interesting discovery in the world of WrestleNomics data. But the other thing I wanted to talk about is it relates to Dynamite. And relates to Dynamite this week was that the median viewer age, this is exciting. We went from lead-in effects to the next exciting issue, which is median viewer age. The median viewer age for NXT was younger than the median viewer age for Dynamite. Now, if you're looking at this chart right now, you can see that this has basically almost never been the case. This is going all the way back since the beginning of the Wednesday Night War, October 2019. And what we see here in the yellow is the median age of that audience from the very beginning, which for NXT, it's been at best in the late 40s at the very beginning, when Dynamite at that time was in the low or mid 40s. And it's moved up, and you know, comically, in the NXT 2.0 days, it was upwards of 60 years old, where half of the audience was over the age of 60 years old in the you know, the late 21, early 22 era of NXT. And it has declined, especially since you see a especially sharp decline, I guess, here from January 23 onward. We see a really pretty strong negative slope here, from, you know, roughly Q4 of 22. And then it sort of levels out a bit by middle of last year, July. But it's still, you know, still getting down there a bit. And what we had here was this week. I'll look it up here to tell you what the exact ages were. Dynamite's median age this past Wednesday was 51.6. 51.6. Half the audience was over 51 years old. But that is the measurement. 51.6. And NXT was 49.9. So slightly lower. And that has never happened except for, one time in June when, I believe it, what was it? June 22nd. Does that line up with an episode of NXT or Dynamite? Maybe it was June 20th. In any case, there's a week in June where I do have, when we reported the data at the time before Nielsen reprocessed it, NXT was older. But then we ended up with it being reprocessed, because I look back on this historically, and NXT ended up younger in that week. Maybe reprocessing showed something that was not necessarily reflective of actual viewership. I don't know. But so maybe there's that one exception. But it's just indicative of what? Of what? Does this matter? Well, as viewership gets higher, viewership usually gets younger. And we're still at a point, right, where, I mean, if we look at, I think I have a slide here, right? Dynamite is basically always having a higher audience than NXT, right? The gray line, except for this past week where they nearly touched, the gray line is usually bigger than the gold line. But it's indicative of, I think, the relevance of the increasing viewership of NXT. I mean, no show by percentage was up more than NXT in 2023. If I share the big spreadsheet and look at our 13-week moving averages of median age for all these shows, and we have seen NXT, you know, repair the age of its viewership and get a lot younger, while Dynamite is not really growing, right? It did grow a bit from, you know, from around this time in early October, in fact, where we've seen a decline in total viewership. It did grow a bit there, but it's not like it's in this really sharp positive slope. So there's that. I mean, we are seeing NXT get younger and its viewership has gotten bigger. And I think that coincides with people caring about the show. People watch it more. I mean, there's something about the youth of the viewer in this environment where traditional viewership is skewed so old, because young people don't watch traditional viewership so much. So I think that's interesting and a juxtaposition from where we were a year ago, a couple years ago, certainly. So there's all that. And what else do we have here?
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 dream beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise, having fun in the sun, or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5hetide.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5hetide.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.
As I've been talking to myself for almost an hour, well, more than an hour, in fact, it's time to talk about football. The Bills face the Dolphins later today in a do or die. Might not make the playoffs if they don't win today, but they could win the division. They will win the division if they win today. Anyway, let's look at Thursday Night Football. Is streaming, speaking of streaming, and people who are young not watching traditional TV and only watching streaming, well, we've got a weekly NFL show that is on streaming, and how's it doing relative to the prior year when it was also on streaming on Amazon Prime Video? And how is it doing compared to traditional TV viewership on Fox and the NFL Network in 2021? So Prime viewership, Amazon Prime viewership for Thursday Night Football is up. In terms of total viewership, it's up in, I believe, every week, right? Is that what we're seeing here? We're seeing 2023 in the yellow, and it was up in week two. They didn't have a week one. I didn't leave it out. They didn't have a week one, so they were up in week two, week three, week four, week five, week six. I'm comparing this to the green, by the way. Week seven, week eight, week nine, week 10, week 11. That Black Friday, which they didn't have in the prior year. It's Thanksgiving week, where others have the Thursday game. Week 13, week 14. They were down in week 15. That's right. I thought there was one there that they were down for, where they had only 8 million viewers for their week 15 game versus 10.3 million the prior year. But they were up in week 16 and 17. So Prime Video's Thursday Night Football did better than the prior year in total viewership. Did better than, and we knew this last year too. Last year did better than the games that were only broadcast on the NFL Network. But those games that were broadcast in 2021 on both Fox and the NFL Network, Amazon Prime Video, in this year nor last year, has not equaled any of them. Nobody watches traditional TV anymore. Well, at least that's not the case when it comes to football. So streaming has not been able to equal what at least Fox plus NFL Network was able to produce a couple of years ago. Now we are seeing 2023 do better than 2022. So that viewership and that reach of streaming, at least when it comes to the NFL, is growing. That's total viewership. Now here's the demo. There are ads on Thursday Night Football. I would say most of the money is justified in terms of the subscriber fees that the NFL drives for all of its TV partners. I don't know how much Amazon Prime Video is. I guess it's certainly adding value, right? In any case, you want that shipping discount. But in the demo, we have not every week, right? But we have, so if we look at just these purple boxes here that are the Fox plus NFL We have Prime Video beating Fox plus NFL in week 5 in the demo, in week 6, under it in week 7, just under, way under in week 8, beating it in week 9, just under in week 10, but beating it in week 11, no comp in week 12, beating it in week 13, which it didn't in the prior year for most of these comps when it's beating it, right? Not beating it in week 14, not beating it in week 15, and then no comp in 16 and 17. So, as you would expect with younger viewership, streaming is able to produce the audience that traditional TV did, but not those old folks. They love their rubber remotes, and they love their Fox, and their NFL Network. They love traditional TV, and they're more apt to continue to use traditional TV and are less apt to use streaming. Now, why am I bringing it? Well, I'm bringing it up because it's the end of the NFL season. We finally have this data in full for a full year versus the prior years. But we also have another interesting data point for this week, because on December 23rd, Saturday night, Peacock had an exclusive NFL game, the Buffalo Bills versus the LA Chargers. And the audience for that game was 7.3 million. Now, that does include the local broadcast affiliates in Buffalo and San Diego broadcasting this over the air. But then again, all of the NFL numbers, I believe, do include that. When NFL games are on cable, or in this case, streaming, it would be the case if it was Amazon Prime Video too, those games also have to be broadcast over the air in the local market for those teams. So when Prime Video broadcast the New Orleans Saints versus the LA Rams, I'm sure those games were also available on broadcast in those markets. So when we're looking at 10.2 million viewers for the Saints versus the Rams on Thursday Night Football, I'm almost positive that included local broadcast viewing too. Anyway, 7.3 million viewers, it's the least watched game of the week. It's in an unusual time slot. It was a Saturday night primetime game. It was not necessarily it was not Monday Night Football. It was not Sunday Night Football. It was not in the traditional 1 o'clock, 4 o'clock Sunday window. What should we compare this against? Well, is there a good comparison point for this game that was exclusively on Peacock? Well, let's look at the Saturday before it, where NFL Network had a game. It was the Vikings and the Bengals, 7.5 million viewers on the NFL Network, a cable network. That doesn't have as strong coverage. I think I could look this up, but that doesn't have as strong coverage as ESPN, but still pretty good. 7.5 million viewers. So it did slightly better than this game that was on Peacock. Is this astounding? A percentage of markets. I mean, by the way, these tables are from the great sportsmediawatch.com, which has lots of, good information about sports TV ratings and other things. So there's that. Pretty comparable to what the NFL Network is doing, which some of these NFL Network games are sort of like, this is the secondary broadcast compared to the major networks that have the games. In any case, we'll see what happens as Peacock has an exclusive playoff game, probably next week, right? We'll see how that does, and I believe Nielsen will be tracking that as well. Why is Nielsen not tracking everything? Why is Nielsen not tracking the WWE premium live events? I would appreciate it if they did. But tells you that what? Streaming is not yet able to capture the audiences that at least broadcast does. And it's about equal to when these games are on sort of a medium cable network. But if we look at this, you know, traditional cable is now at about 70 million homes. Netflix is now at about 70 million homes. And sometime during this year, what's probably going to happen is Netflix is going to have more subscribers than traditional cable. And we will increasingly, as we increasingly have, live in a world where more people have streaming, less people have cable. And we'll see what happens when streaming does, you know, increasingly close this gap, and whether or not streaming will ever be profitable for some of these businesses, including Peacock and Paramount, another question. Although Peacock subscribers have surpassed those of ESPN Plus in the most recent reporting quarter of Q3. So there's that. And we have a story that may be good news for AEW. This is coming from Sportico. In their report of the NCAA has announced a new 8-year deal. $920 million is their new TV agreement with ESPN that covers 40 different championships, most notably the annual women's basketball tournament. This is the NCAA's second most valuable media package, covering nearly every major championship except top-tier football, which the NCAA doesn't control. Football is a different beast. And the men's basketball tournament, which it sells separately. In addition to women's basketball, the package includes softball, baseball, the big draw, volleyball, and ice hockey championships, among others. The inclusion of women's basketball tournament is particularly notable as the NCAA faced mounting criticism over its unequal treatment of its men's and women's postseason tournaments. Many focused on the organization's decision to sell the men's event as a standalone and the women's event as part of a bigger group. Last year, Sportico broke down the arguments for and against separating the women's tournament, which includes estimates of what it might fetch on its own and what it might do to the value of other rights. The new contract, this is the key part here, the new contract for this hodgepodge of 40 different NCAA championships averages $115 million per year. So we don't really have a wrestling TV AAV average annual value that's around $115 million currently. Because what we have, Raw 265, Peacock WWE 200, maybe a little more than 200. We have SmackDown on Fox 205. We have SmackDown going to NBCU in the future, 287. We have AEW 44 or so before Collision, now about 70-75, I think, with Collision. So anyway, $115 million is the current value and is more than three times larger than the previous package. The deal between ESPN and NCAA was a 14-year deal worth $500 million and an average annual value of $35.7 million per year. The men's tournament rights are shared by CBS and Turner, which were most recently extended through 2032 in an 8-year deal with $8.8 billion. Endeavor, our friends at Endeavor, people we know at Endeavor, advised the NCAA on the deal. So I think it's interesting that maybe this is a good sign for AEW. I will temper this with, I think the NXT deal was not great news for an AEW deal. Because why? Because NXT went from $15 million average annual value on the USA Network. They got a new deal with the CW, which was an increase, 70% increase. Oh, great news for NXT. To about $25, $26 million a year. But based on their viewership and what they're delivering, you know, per viewer hour compared to what AEW is delivering per viewer hour, it makes AEW look like it's closer to fully valued. Does that mean AEW won't get an upgrade? It probably doesn't mean that they won't get an upgrade, but it doesn't reflect well on the value of wrestling television. Now, AEW is a larger package of hours. We're talking about NXT, which is 2 hours, a little bit more with an overrun of weekly content. NXT is five plus some unmonetized rights, including perhaps pay-per-view, library, maybe other things, maybe other small pieces there. So, but still, you break that down on an average per hour basis, and NXT it makes AEW look fully valued, which is something we've looked at in prior episodes. But this deal going from $36 million to, right, 35.7, as you can see here, to 15, which is a 3x increase. You've got a deal that I wonder what the hours are. We don't know. It's 40 different championships and Lord knows how they'll air them. If they'll air them on ESPN, ESPN Plus. But we've got a deal of $36 million, which is less than AEW, but pretty close. Well, pretty close to the Dynamite plus Rampage deal, going 3x to 115. It's encouraging that a deal that is of that range of value, of around AEW's, you know, sub $100 million deal, AAV, is still able to get a multiple X increase. So not just a 40x increase, like a really a much more valuable property like SmackDown. Went from 205 to 287, 40%. Stock market was not happy about it, but it's an increase of 40%. And so it's maybe the fact that these deals that are already in the hundreds, in the multiple hundreds of millions of dollars, maybe they're not going to get as big of an increase, while these smaller deals could still get, you know, 2x, 3x, maybe more. And it's encouraging that AEW could get a deal of 2x, 3x that will help them become profitable and help this business become sustainable. So there's that. TKO is merging the global partnerships teams for WWE and UFC, led by Grant Norris Jones, who's played a key role in UFC's global partnerships. So he's coming from UFC, and Lou Koskovilis, who I believe is also a UFC employee up to this point. So consolidating those two teams, as we'll see, you know, this is one of the opportunities that was said to exist. And the reason why you do this merger, among other reasons, besides lots of layoffs and saving lots of money on cutting people, is that you also get to sell sponsorships and other business partnerships together, whether that's site fees, whether that's advertising and sponsorships, whether that's, you know, doing a UFC and a WWE event in the same weekend, whether that's co-promoting your events to one another's audiences. So not much to say other than that's something that TKO announced this week. There's that. And Money in the Bank will come to Toronto. And I guess I'll be going to that in July, July 6th, just over the border to me. Also doing an NXT show on a Sunday, which is not something I think we've seen at least in a while. All these events happening at Scotiabank, SmackDown the night before, Money in the Bank on Saturday. Of course, they want the PLE on Saturday on Peacock. And on Sunday, NXT Heatwave. So that'll be a case, I guess, of Collision having to go against a pay-per-view, but not having to go against an NXT PLE that could have been placed on a consecutive weekend or something like that, on a Saturday night going against Collision. So it's at least it's kind of reducing the number of events, at least by one, that Collision will have to go against that. In every case so far, have hurt its viewership. And then, finally, attendance trends for WWE and AEW. Average attendance for WWE in this year, and we're talking about estimated tickets distributed here. I'm going to call the numbers from New Japan's official website. I'm going to call that distributed because I think that's paid less comps. That's what distributed is, basically. So WWE average worldwide, 9,000 to AEW's 5,800. To New Japan's 1,800. We don't have good enough, robust enough data for CMLL and AAA. I imagine they would be in this conversation. Would they be above New Japan? I don't know. And I don't think any of the other Japanese companies would be above New Japan here. Can't imagine that. And I think I've looked at the cage match data to assure me of that, in the past. But the distance between, I guess it's interesting to note that, you know, the distance between, what is it? It's 4,000 between New Japan and AEW, and it's what? That's less than 4,000 between AEW and WWE. So the distance between these companies, I guess, in terms of average audience, average attendance, is about the same from one to the other. In terms of total, not viewership, but total attendance, total estimated tickets distributed, 1.92. I believe I'm estimating ticket sales of about 1.7, but 1.92 estimated tickets distributed for WWE. AEW doing about a little over a quarter of that, 552,000, about a half a million. WWE doing just under 2 million, and then New Japan doing 265,000. So about a quarter of a million there. And the number of events, New Japan ran far more events than AEW, but not as many as WWE. WWE ran 220, AEW ran 95, and New Japan ran 162. This is the average over time, as we know here. Well, the average for AEW is up slightly from 5,600 last year to 5,800 in, well, I say last year, 5,600 in 2022 to 5,800 in 2023, which is down from the peak year of 2021 with the novel, not coronavirus, the novel CM Punk, 6,300 in 2021. So they're, in terms of average, still with adding this collision show and adding about four or five house shows, adding some pay-per-views, of course, what is this really boosted by? It's boosted by a single event that did, what we're counting here as an 83,000 estimated tickets distributed. Now they'll do another all in, and we'll see to what extent they're able to deliver a similar number, probably a lower number, probably with higher ticket prices, but probably a lower number. But still a really big number that's really going to boost their average. This is the total attendance over time, 552 down from 390 or up from 399, up from 225 in the prior year. We've got the estimated ticket sales in here, which is simply knocking off 9%. And this is WWE. And yeah, I guess we can get into this big question about, is this a boom period? And what does this 2023 year look like compared to the Attitude Era? I'm not going into the Hulk Hogan era. We did that with some different data a few months ago, but the average estimated tickets distributed 9,000, estimating tickets sold of 7,900. And that is higher than any year since 2002. Higher average. However, there's a lot more events happening here, right? And the total attendance is 1.9 million, which is lower than, it is higher than 2019 when they were running a lot more events, which is impressive. But the total attendance is lower than 2018, again, when they were running, I think, over 300 events. And this year, as we looked at a moment ago, they ran 220 events. So they're running far fewer events. Does running fewer events help them do stronger averages? Arguably not, because the extra shows that they're doing, all the cuts to shows have been through house shows, largely in smaller markets, I think. I suppose we could comb through that and see what cities they're not visiting that they used to visit and look at how big those markets are that they have been cut. But I guess the notion is that if they ran more of those small market shows, the average would be down. But not necessarily that the big shows that they're doing in bigger markets, those would presumably not be affected by an increase in supply of events. In any case, what's happening here? It's hard to compare. It's hard to compare years that have upwards of 300 events or in the high 200s in the number of events that they're running. Just 5 years ago, they were running over 300 events. In one of those years, they're running 365 events. So they're running the same number of events that there are days in the year. It's not all the same talent, of course. But this is after they did the Raw and SmackDown brand split. They ran increasing number of events. That did coincide with their total attendance increasing and peaking, in 2017 in this was called 2010s here at 2.4 million, and then being down substantially in 2018 and 2019 as part of the multi-year secular decline in WWE fan engagement, despite their financial picture being great. What does this mean compared to 1999? It's not as hot as that time. But it's absolutely hotter than 2019. And I would say, I don't know, vibes tell me that it's hotter than it's been probably since 2002. I buy that. But that's just my gut. What about New Japan? Is New Japan, with its first full year with at least a lot less restrictions here related to COVID, internationally, it did about the same average for attendance as it did domestically in Japan. But it's, you know, despite what we looked at earlier in terms of the Wrestle Kingdom attendance being about even to what it was in 2016 and 17, we've got a domestic attendance that is still, you know, lower by the hundreds in terms of average attendance. Back in 2016 and 2017, they were doing 2,200, 2,300, and here in 2023, doing 1,800. So a lower average attendance, but this international attendance went back up. Of course, there's a minority of events that are happening there. In terms of total attendance, we see similar, right? 265,000 is the total that I get for their attendance in 2023. And we've got over 300,000 back in these years where they were doing similar attendance at the Tokyo Dome for Wrestle Kingdom. But a total attendance in this year that is not really near what they were doing in these 2 years back here. So there's all that. We've got market-to-market stuff that tells you more of the same. WWE had more positive market-to-market comparisons. In Q4, they had 33-9. They're doing well in live events, as you can see here. AEW, not so much. Most of the market-to-market same event comparisons that we can make, that is Dynamite returning to a market, mostly those are down. And throughout the year, that was the case, including in Q4 most recently, as that has come to an end. If you want to look at that in more detail, that is on the Patreon for subscribers. And that is finally all that I have is my voice and my throat. I don't know if I'll be able to speak for the next few hours because that was a lot of talking for me. But I appreciate everybody tuning in. If you want to, again, look at the quarter hour reports, look at some of these live event reports that have been put out earlier in this week. All of that is on patreon.com/WrestleNomics. If you want to look through the slides, that is also there for subscribers. And we'll be back on Wednesday with Pollock and Thurston. If you want to listen to this next week and listen to me talk to myself for another hour and a half, that's only for people who are subscribers. So thanks everybody for listening and tuning in, and I'll talk to you next time.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 dream beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise, having fun in the sun, or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5hetide.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5hetide.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.